You don't have to answer until you're 18. Then it will become a more difficult question to answer. Does everybody here think that who they are and what they have belongs to God? So you're like, please don't make me say that out loud in front of everybody. I just don't want to do it. When I was a kid, I had a storybook of what we just read today. And it was actually called The Eight Bags of Gold. And I remember it like it was yesterday. It was one of those really, really thin books, very, very colorful. Did anybody have that book? No? So I can make anything up and you'll believe me. This is good. So in this story, the one who receives the five bags of gold is just drawn beautifully. Like, he's got stunning robes. He's like 6'10", handsome, and he is given the five bags of gold to go forward from his master. The second guy who gets two bags of gold, he's more like your average Joe, right? Not too impressionable, but not unattractive. His robes aren't as glamorous. He's shorter. We'll give him 5'11", just for fun. And he is given the two bags, and he goes on his way. Now, the third gentleman who is given is about 5', just for fun, because I like to be taller. 5', short, stumpy, bald, all of those stereotypical things, no offense, guys, all of those stereotypical things that are usually ascribed to folks who aren't as noticeable as others, right? He is wearing robes that fit tightly, and he's got beads of sweat coming down his face and frown lines as he's taking this bag of gold and he's looking away from his master. So the pictures are really pretty brilliant, right? Because a kid like me at the time, who maybe was 6 or 7, understood the dynamic of what was happening with the three who were receiving these so-called gifts. And while I understood why the master was thrilled when everybody else sort of doubled their profits, what I couldn't comprehend was why this man, who clearly suffered from a really bad anxiety disorder, although I hadn't diagnosed it at that point, really, was really afraid. He was so afraid of disappointing his master and so afraid of losing what had been given to him that he buried it. And at the very least, when it was time to come back, he was actually smiling in the picture, giving it back. And of course, the master berates him, and this parable ends in such a way that leaves us going, "Buh? Would God say that to someone that God gave gifts to?" But I remember that. I remember it like it was yesterday. Now, it didn't take seminary for me to get a better understanding. I heard that, by the way. The Bible has often used words that can be interpreted or misinterpreted or changed. So, for example, while I knew this story from the eight bags of gold, we've heard that today from talents. Now, it is not uncommon for us to take this story and interpret talents as gifts, correct? We all have talents. Anybody want to name any of their talents? Anybody afraid to name any of their talents? Cooking. Will you be cooking for us today? Okay, good. If we're looking at talents as our personal abilities, we might read this exactly as Kyan described, which is we are given gifts that we are supposed to use, and if we don't use them, then, Dana, you said it best earlier, hide them under a bushel and don't let your talents go to waste. But I have to admit, I was never quite clear on what I was supposed to use them for, right? If I could draw, I could draw, but then what do I do with the picture? If I could cook, I would cook, but then what do I do with the food? Does anybody else have problems understanding what you're supposed to do with the talents that you have? That's okay, because I'm going to tell you what to do with them in a minute. Even interpretations today still look at this, that's exactly what a talent is. It's a gift. But do you know that if we were to put a monetary value on a talent, from first century Palestine, we are talking about one talent equaling $10,000. But $10,000 during the time of Jesus, that's a lot of cash, right? So the one person is getting close to $50,000. The second is getting $20,000, and the last is getting $10,000. And they are given this money to do something with. It is lent to them in order to do something. Now, I'm going to be very clear, and this is another disturbing thing that you may or may not have heard. When we look at some of these interpretations and listen to this from the monetary perspective, we also sort of get a notion that maybe this parable is justifying our personal wealth. Have you heard of the prosperity gospel? Anybody know what prosperity theology is? What is it? Work hard and get rewards that are yours? No. Who deserves to be rich? No. Oh, there's a belief. Okay, so now we're getting into the subtext. Yes, prosperity theology reads like this. It is a Christian religious doctrine that financial blessing is the will of God for Christians. And that faith, positive speech, and donations to Christian ministries will increase your material wealth. So get out your checkbooks, everybody. It's time to ante up. No? No. But it is a theology that is grasped by many, that in order to prosper, you must give to a religious institution. And here's Claire up here talking about stewardship. Claire, aren't you saying the exact same thing? Money is a hard thing to talk about in church, isn't it? No, not for me, it's not. But it's a hard thing to hear about when I bring it up, isn't it? When you go someplace and they're asking for money, aren't you a little bit worried about what that's going to look like? But see, here's the thing that we often forget or we don't realize that's happening in this parable. If we focus on gifts or talent, then we're not really focusing on the essence of what is being said. What's being said, first of all, is that everything that we have is not ours to keep. That everything we have and who we are belongs to the Master. That's where the story begins. Everything we have is on borrowed time, including our lives. We get to enjoy the use of creation with the mandate that we will take care of it. You know the old saying, if you hike it in, you hike it out, right? You're supposed to take care of things, referring to cleaning up and leaving things as you find them. We're expected theologically to preserve and even make better our environment and our world for generations to come, aren't we? We also ascribe to the notion, most of us, that you can't take it with you, referring, of course, to not taking any possessions into the next adventure, except maybe the spirit with which we arrived to begin with. And so what do? We often leave our possessions and our treasures to those who will follow. That our wealth and our possessions, however we define them, our gifts and our talents, however we define them, are temporary. But there's even a larger message in this gospel, and that is what is being asked of the reader through the example of those in the stories. These men are lent a portion, just a portion, of the master's wealth. It is not theirs to keep, but to use. But it also has a specific purpose. It is not a purpose that they get to decide how they're going to use the money. They are given the money to make things better, to increase the value of what they've been given. They're supposed to increase the worth of these temporary gifts so that there will be more, so that there will be abundance, but not for their own use. See, that's the piece that we miss. It's an increase in abundance, but not for their own use. The gift to the man with the greatest amount isn't that he gets to have more for himself, but rather that in using what he has given, he can better the kingdom that much more. He will have a greater role then in realizing what God's desire for all of us might be. The reward then isn't money or things, but his reward is knowing that he's been invited and challenged to share what he has been lent so that he can have a greater role in preserving and expanding God's abundance for all. We don't get to keep the fruits of our investments, as those investments, first and foremost, are not ours to begin with. But rather, because we have been entrusted with so much, we are invited and challenged to use those gifts, the talents, the money, to engage in a co-creation project with the divine, to create a kingdom as we all imagine it could be. Do you realize how big that is? Think about what we're saying. We are saying, okay, I'm saying it, but you're buying it. We are saying that God has so much faith in our ability to co-create that God is willing to give each of us a portion of so much so that we can increase it for others. Can you grasp that? Do you know how much responsibility that is? How many of you want that responsibility? It's a huge responsibility. We talk about having faith in God, but do we realize that God has faith in us? That by giving us so much, we are able then to put aside our fears and our worries and our creases and our beads of sweat and say, I'm going to take what I have, no matter how much it is, no matter what it is, because I have been chosen to receive a bit of the treasure so that I can make it better for others. Whew. That is huge. That is an extravagant opportunity for us to be co-creators in this kingdom. And it is huge. You know, the notion of stewardship is vast, and it is beyond comprehension because we take a look at what we have and we think that what we can offer is so little, but we all know that putting together our gifts, our times, our talents, our tithes, suddenly, we have increased our value tremendously. We all know that. We are a hospitable, radical congregation. If one of you goes forward and welcomes somebody at the door, that's a great thing. But can you imagine how it feels when all of you welcome each other? Suddenly, that has grown to immense proportions. I want to share two quick visits I had with folks this week. Unexpected. The first was with our conference minister, Sue Art. She is like our bishop, if we're going to parallel with other traditions. And Sue and I had a great meeting discussing lots of different things. And one of the things that she said to me, and she has said this before, is, I love what your church is doing down there. They are doing great things, and you need to remind them that I'm still watching. Because though we're small, we are an example to our conference. I don't want you to forget that. But here's the other thing that happened this week. I had coffee with another clergy person in Colorado Springs. This person has served in churches pretty much all over the country. And as we're sitting and talking, she said to me, Claire, I hope that if the time comes when you think that you are ready to leave that church and go someplace else, Carol, it's okay. Just stay focused. Stay focused. You're kind of messing up my momentum here. I hope you know what you're saying goodbye to. Because there are no churches like yours, that there are few churches, and I have not come across them, that live into your mission and vision the way your congregation does. And then I told her the truth. But the point was that when people come here, they recognize those gifts, those talents, the devotion, the commitment to what it means to take what you have and let it spill out so that others can experience it too. So now we're going to have a little fun. And for those of you who wanted to have more than one bulletin today, now you're going to be in trouble. Everybody should have had a little something in your bulletin. Yes? Okay. There is only one rule to this game. You can't ask me, but what am I supposed to, but how do I, but blah, 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 blah. In fact, don't ask me anything. You can ask one another, but you can't ask me. You are to take whatever is in your bulletin and double it. Now, whatever's in your bulletin could represent a whole lot of different things. It doesn't have to necessarily represent what it literally is. But you are going to take that, and don't feel limited if you want to do more than doubling. That's okay too. But you are going to take that and you are going to double it. And then you are going to take what you have created, however you've created it, and you are going to use it to share abundance with someone else. I don't care who the other person is. It doesn't matter. But you are going to take it, at least double it, and then use it for someone else. And then you're going to come back and share the story over the next couple of weeks. Got it? Got your task? Any questions? Ha! Psych! Let the people say. Amen.